Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and on today's episode we have Anindya Datta and Sandeep Dalmia, the co-founders of Stanza Living, in conversation with Tarun Davda, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India. Stanza Living is India's leading co-living startup that provides managed accommodations targeted at students, employees or anybody who moves to a new city. Both founders were also recently featured on Fortune India's 40 Under 40 list that recognizes India's young and brightest entrepreneurs. In this episode, we cover what it takes to hyperscale a digital business amongst a pandemic and the biggest learnings that have emerged from this experience. Tune in to know more.
Welcome everyone to Matrix Moments. I have two very special guests and founders that personally very, very fond of, and I've really enjoyed the journey with them since the time we invested. Anindya and Sandeep from Stanza. Thank you guys. Thank you for taking out the time. Really appreciate you all doing this.
Thank you, Tarun. The pleasure is
Thank you, Tarun.
Great, guys. So I'm going to kick off with a question. And like I was mentioning earlier, the thought of doing this actually got triggered when Anindya and I were talking, I think, a couple of weeks ago. And obviously, we're recording this when hopefully the worst of COVID is behind us. Wave two was brutal for a lot of us personally, as well as, you know, for our companies. It looks like things are stable now, but there is always this lingering fear of a, you know, another third wave. And I was asking Anindya, saying, how do you guys plan, right? You guys are in what people call a phygital business, right? Which is significant on the ground operations, but being disrupted using a sort of digital layer. And especially in your case, given a lot of what you all are doing, there is an external sort of dependency on when states and colleges sort of announce reopening. I was just asking him, saying, hey, how do you guys even, like, you know, plan, like, every day, every week when you guys wake up? Do you decide to double down? Do you say, hey, let me wait and watch? Do you take a more conservative stand and say, hey, we're not going to do anything until this thing is behind us? So I think first question, and that was the context of getting, you know, doing this, because I thought a lot of the things that Anindya was mentioning, and I'm sure there are a lot of learnings beyond which, you know, we've discussed. So a lot has changed since, I guess, early 2020 when we last did this together. Walk us through a little bit about highlights of the last 18 months specifically, and maybe with a focus on how do you adapt the business to a off now, on now, again off now nature of what has happened in the last 12 months, given the lockdowns, and what have you been your biggest learnings, and, you know, stuff that hopefully will benefiting, you know, other founders that are running similar businesses.
Cool. I'll take the first one first, as to kind of what have been our learnings over the last kind of 18 odd months of kind of, you know, dealing with a post-COVID or, like, you know, through COVID world. And I think, Sandeep, you can add some points around the pieces around how we have kind of worked this out from a digital lens. I think, Tarun, one of the big challenges for us in April of last year was to, I think, acknowledge and embrace the ambiguity which we were in. And then, you know, I think one of the key important points at which Sandeep and I said that, you know, this is how we'll approach things was when we said that, look, this is not a one size fits all answer. So, you know, what works for, you know, some other business will not work for us. And so even though we are hearing a lot of things around us, let's figure out what's right for us in our first principles basis, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of companies, for example, through that period, and you would have seen them, were... there's a lot of talk around pivots and about, you know, how do you pivot from something to another or do something else differently. We took a contrarian approach to that. We said, focus on your core. You know, what you do well, just focus on building that out even better. You know, maybe there's pause, but, you know, let's focus on what is really good, what we are really good at. And I think there are four things which we always say that we are reasonably good at as a company, right? We do things at a sensibly aggressive pace, you know, in the sense that we're not mindless with our expansion. So we want to be sensible with our aggressive pace of growth. One. Mm. Two, we said is that quality of people who are running different parts of the kind of, you know, engine, focus on that. And, you know, strength of the quality of people is important for us. And we've always said this internally, that we are not an ecosystem of stars, but we want to be like the New Zealand of the startup ecosystem. There's no one single star, but then everyone as a collective punches above their weight. The third thing for us was playbooks and focusing on kind of creating as scalable an ecosystem as possible, and said that let's go back to all our processes, systems, and ask ourselves this question. And fourth was around tech and product, and saying that, can we double down on our technology ecosystem now? So of these four things, I would say scaling up was that time was out of the question, right? And we said, look, scaling up at this point in time doesn't make sense. So, you know, let's forget that kind of, you know, sensible aggression is not doing anything at this point to begin with. But the other three, which was like focusing on building the playbook, focusing on tech, and focusing on people, something which we doubled down really, really hard on over the last 18 months. And we said, this is what is going to strengthen our core and what we have built out. So every single process at Stanza was minutely kind of, you know, revisited. And then luckily for us, we had this period from December to March where we could stress test it as kind of business was starting to come back. And then again, we've gone back to the kind of engine room and said that, okay, let's look at what we've learned from these 3-4 months and again, revisit that. So a lot of focus on strengthening playbooks. We built an entire F&B tech product literally within 1 month. And it's a kind of product which companies will build by themselves completely, right? From, you know, menu management to customer selection, choice selection, to creating virtual storefronts, all of that on the F&B side. We built it literally within a month. And since then, we've been kind of improving and fine-tuning that. So building on product was very, very important. Our entire consumer interface, we said, what have we learned over the last 18 months where things went wrong in terms of, you know, consumer experience was bad, or, you know, we missold, or we undersold, or we oversold, or did something wrong, right? And correct and plug those gaps now in terms of what the consumer, his journey through the technology product as it was. And then third was like quality of people. Like we said, keep our flock together, keep our teams engaged. You know, everyone needs to kind of feel that they are building something big here, and we are here, we are pausing here, but we're not stopping. So one of the things which we did was, for example, we didn't cut salaries. We deferred comp. We said, look, comp is there. It's your comp. We're not taking it away from you. We'll defer it till a kind of bright sunny day comes back. And more importantly, we doubled down on equity allocation. Every single leader, whatever stock they have, we bumped it up by whatever more. We said, you know, you should feel more than owner of the business. We opened up equity ownership plans for everybody in the company. And said that you can become an owner of this business and you can participate in its growth story in the coming future. And a lot of people actually said, this is great, bottom of the cycle, let's buy into this company at this point of time. And, you know, a lot of people in the company actually doubled down on their equity allocation. So I would say those are the three kind of pieces of the puzzle which we spend a lot of time. We said, strengthen your core. And for us, our core was people, product, playbook. And we said, go back to that and double down on that. And I think that's what we did over the last 18 months. We didn't spend as much time on thinking about alternative uses of our properties, for example, or you know, short-term revenue generation. You know, those are obviously options on the table. But we just felt that it's not that we didn't do all of that, but we just felt that that was more of a distraction than a long-term project for us. And we're going to build moats in the long term. Then this is how you need to focus on. COVID is here. It's going to be gone at some point of time. What will stay with you after that will not be the short-term. not be the short-term revenues, but will be with you the long-term kind of capability building which you have put in place. And so we actually didn't go down the route of thinking about pivots or alternative uses. We said, just focus on what you know you do well and do that best. I will let Sandeep pick up the point on optionality in building, but I think that's one of the things which is important for anyone in the phygital world, is that are you structuring all your relationships with all your partners, whether they are landlords in our case, or whether they are vendors, or whether they are warehouses, or whether they are, you know, whoever you're working with who are in the ecosystem, helping you piece your story together, with sufficient amount of optionality on day one, and pay for that optionality on day one, because, you know, and because you will need that optionality and you'll exercise that option at some point of time.
Correct.
And I think we did that through the last 18 months. The relationships which we've built with a lot of our partners had a lot of optionalities built in to our contracts. You know, unlike a lot of young startups, we were one of the very few companies where all of our contracts had force majeure clauses in place. And we invoke them as and when appropriate. But it's not like we then said, you know, this is the FM clause, you know, go to hell, Mr. Landlord.
Correct.
We sat down with the landlord and explained to him why we are doing
absolutely.
That. So I think that across the board, and even on vendors, and Sandeep, you can elaborate on that. We've done a lot of this optionality building.
Sandeep, just before you add, this is really good, Anindya. Thank you. I think along with, I guess, the stuff that Anindya asked you to comment on, Sandeep, one thing that would be helpful, I guess, is, you know, when I've been talking to founders, the constant dilemma is there is a short-term sort of, you know, supply side attractiveness because, you know, they're beaten down today. I know I can get better deals. I can lock in them, you know, much, much for longer periods of time at terms which are much more favorable to me. But then there is also this constant fear about, hey, what if? What if there is a third wave? What if there is a fourth wave? Am I biting more than I can chew? How do you balance this sort of long-term versus short-term? Maybe if you can give a live example of one or two actual tough trade-off decisions that you'll have to make, right? And how did you all think through those? And, you know, how did you all figure out sort of in each scenario what decision to take?
On the supply side, Andy, maybe you can add, but at least on all our partner ecosystem, Tarun, I'll go back to when COVID started, right? And this was a new thing for everyone. So all our partners were equally confused about their businesses as everyone was in terms of how COVID would impact and how things should be. So one of the things for us was very clear and transparent communication with our partners on day one. For example, if we needed certain amount of discounts, even above and beyond what the contract had said, we were pretty open towards discussing that this is what we need and why don't we talk it out and figure it out, what you need to do to give us this discount. For example, one of our larger fixed costs in the business can be internet costs. And we got upwards of 60-70% discount month on month from our internet partners on an ongoing basis. And we have a very strategic partner to it. And there was a very frank discussion. And he said that go live of any new property will probably be deferred by 30 days if I have to give you this much discount, because I will do certain things at my back end to do it. And therefore, we figured out that, okay, our business timelines will change and we'll plan for it, because we also don't know when we want to go live and we'll plan around that. But we got 60-70% discount without getting a hit to our partners, right? I mean, we're continuing to get that discount with them on most of our assets as we do. And the second thing, and this example I particularly chose because, as you were saying, we can get opportunistic rates right now for a lot of things in the market. But for us, there were few strategic partners we would like to stick with, because this is like probably we're building a business for many decades to come and not just for next 2-3 years. And if we keep on losing these strategic partners during these opportunistic times, probably we won't find many strategic partners. So we haven't lost any strategic partner and we continue to work with them. We haven't even gone fishing out many things. What we are continuously doing is figuring out with them if they are getting any strategic benefits during these times and should we get part of that benefit passed on to us, right? And in fact, we are working harder to build more and more optionality in our clauses for going forward, because COVID was one type of situation that came into the business and maybe what will come in future, we don't know. So our learning from this has been more bite-size commitments and how can we have... So for example, in the past, we used to have a 6-month commitment to certain volume. We've moved on to LOIs rather than POs, but we now do bite-size POs so that vendor doesn't get their capital stuck. So most of the most important thing for anyone in this business, not just us, is cash flows, right? So even for partners and vendors, it is the cash flow. So the more you overcommit, the harder it gets for the vendors and partners, because their cash flow gets equally stuck. Right? So that was, I think, the most important thing for us was working hand in glove with the partners, understanding their constraints and working around that in most cases and solving for cash flow issues for them and us, right? While we were getting discounts, we were also planning cash flow payments and things around that. We were always good with the bank balance, but at least we wanted to manage that and work with them, with our partners closely. The second thing in my head, and Andy and I discussed this many, many times, was between, there was a very strong trade-off, and I'm sure your other portfolio companies and founders faced this, was cost cutting and strategic costs, right? I mean, there is a very fine line. There is very high pressure to reduce costs, and everyone wants to reduce costs when revenue is getting massively impacted due to COVID.
Correct.
So we very carefully chose certain costs were strategic. Now you may call them costs, or you just may call them strategic investments, and certain costs are pure cost. So we were ruthless on pure cost, right? We reduced great every point. Possible pure cost that existed, but we were also pretty, I would say, I mean, hell bent on not cutting down any strategic investment, right? And we kept on double downing. Like, for example, you said there was opportunistic way to get cost reduction. There was opportunistic time to get great talent in the industry, right? So at middle and senior level, we actually kept on hiring throughout COVID because we wanted to bring strategic people who we were not able to bring on board during pre-COVID times. And it has again started getting harder given all the fundraise that has been happening around the world. Yeah. But last end of last year, beginning of Q1 of this year, we were able to get some very, very critical people to our leadership team. And we were also we still feel very proud of the fact that we did not lose anyone in our leadership during 18 months when it was very deeply impacting our industry. And so I think for us, these two things were very, very critical, working hand in glove with partners and looking at strategic investments carefully. And last, and this happened more on supply and operations side and sales side, we decentralized more and more decision making because our business is more regionally spread and COVID rules were also very straight state run rules. Centralized decision making across the board was not possible. So launching a property, not launching a property, etc., was all decentralized to most extent. And that allowed us to have that agility in our business, right? So we are functionally oriented as a company. So regional functional teams would be able to decide and come back on what we do. And I think we started this exercise at the beginning of COVID. And more now, I think it's almost decentralized to some extent. We are not involved in most decision making, which is completely actually dependent on COVID because we are not aware of actually what happens on different state as much as our regional leadership does.
Correct. So I want to touch upon one point you guys mentioned about sort of doing right by your partners, right? Through this tough phase. A lot of people or a lot of companies, like I said, it's easy to slip into this, hey, you know what? The power equation is in my favor. Let me squeeze these guys to the extent possible, right? And I'm sure that temptation may have, you know, been an option for you as well, right? To exploit. How have different stakeholders in your business responded? What are you all seeing in terms of overall market structure? How did you all decide and, you know, what allowed you all to take a step back and say, hey, we're going to take a long-term view to this, right? We're not going to take a, you know, short-term, hey, let me try and squeeze everybody that I can.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I think one of the things which surprised me a lot was how a lot of people got the, what I thought at least was basics wrong. And the basics on this was, pick up the phone and talk to the person, right? And explain to him what's happening in your business and hear what's happening in his business or his side of the story. And then triage this and say, okay, these are X kind of partners, you know, landlords, vendors who, you know, probably have the ability to bear this out. Strategic, maybe we'll kind of, you know, push a little hard on some of these guys. Some of these guys, they have very specific asks and very specific commitments. Can we meet that for them? And hence kind of build on that relationship. And there are some where you feel, look, this is no way on earth, you know, I can kind of, the balance of power does not sit with me at all in this conversation. So let's be a little bit more giving on that. So not trying to paint everything with one brush was very, very important. For example, a lot of our landlords, I was very clear in some properties that, look, I want this property come what may. The landlord today may not want me as much as I want this property. So you know what, pay up and keep this property in your ecosystem. There are some properties where I know there's no one coming to this landlord tomorrow but me, because you know I'm kind of very well entrenched in the system. You know, it's a large property. You know, I will probably not have too much competition here. And maybe on this one, I'll spend a little bit more time negotiating, talking to the guy, trying to kind of get a little bit more if I can. But again, not in terms of bullying the guy into submission, but more in terms of like conversational approach before we sign. And there were some cases where the landlord's simple ask was, look, I understand your position. I have an EMI. Can you cover my EMI costs or not? Right. And that's a fair ask from the guy. And you do that, right? The other thing is, can you find softer ways of working with your partners in helping them? I remember, and Sandeep will know this better than I do, there was one of our vendor partners who was in the middle of a fundraise at that point of time. And for him, having collections of some sort was important. We said, you know what, we will support you. So we'll get you, you know, whatever money you need now, but can you give me a long-term rebate in return?
Interesting.
There was one partner of ours, one landlord of ours who, you know, in the second wave of COVID, went through an absolute tormentous time with his family and a lot of people being in the ICU. We you know, went hell for leather to kind of get him and his family ICU beds, oxygen.
So you all did this, and these are outside, I mean, these aren't employees. These are just like supply partners.
Supply partners, so landlords, vendors, et cetera, et cetera. So there were a lot of softer things which I think strengthened the relationship with a lot of landlords.
Outstanding.
Having said that, Tarun, is it that all of our relationships, you know, have been smooth sailing? No, right? I mean, give or take, 2-3% of the portfolio does enter into a slightly more combative argument, and you know, both sides are posturing. But I would say by and large, 97-98% of our supply side and vendor side portfolio has been very, very well managed by the team in terms of figuring out what does the, you know, there are a lot of times in last year, I remember Sandeep used to create P&Ls for our partners so that we know, you know, where his cash situation is and how it will evolve in the next three, four months, so that we are not kind of shortchanging people at that point of time. I think all that work was very, very important for us when we kind of sat down with these guys and negotiated that. What surprised me was how quickly a lot of the other players across sectors just stopped communicating. And I think that's where relationships went for a toss. That's where things turned sour. And I think that's what we luckily didn't do as a mistake.
You over-communicated, you understand. Oh, I think that's a great point. I really like the doing the softer things as well, because I think during these times, that's really something that people don't forget very, very easily, right? The other question I did want to cover is, so you all announced, I don't know if you announced, but it leaked your $100 million plus fundraise earlier in the year. And I think that caught a lot of people by surprise, partly because of the timing of it, but also partly because generally there's been sort of mixed views on, hey, what does the pandemic mean for co-living as an industry, right? I would love to get your view on how do you see the pandemic altering the dynamics of the overall co-living space? And if there were, I don't know if there are, but if there are maybe one or two big changes in your view of what Stanza will look like in 5 years as a result of having been through this experience, would love to maybe spend a few minutes on that and understand that.
Yeah, Sandeep, do you want to take that?
Yep. So, Karan, obviously, having the money in the bank is useful, gives a lot of confidence in terms of continuing to double down on growth as we all are talking about, and doing that with money in the bank is easier than otherwise.
Yeah.
From pure the COVID experience plus where we are as a company and 5 years from now, how we think about it, what we haven't spoken about and we've kept a little quiet on is we've done a lot of multiple pilots in these 18 months on different aspects of the business to see how we've always spoken about how we have a very, very exciting consumer set with us. And we can, there are a lot of consumer services that we can layer on our base product. And we've got this 18 months in on and off periods to try out in different spurts of the country, right? Like, so to see what would work in a Karnataka versus what would work in an AP Telangana and so on. And we've been able to now see there are many consumer services which are very, very attractive for our consumers, which wherein all the extra services that we've always spoken about is becoming semi-real in our mind, right? So I can see that Stanza will no longer be a student housing or a working professional operating or a co-living company. The way we talk about ourselves now is a real estate operating platform for long-term accommodation, right? And this time has given us confidence to actually, you bring on any set of consumer base which needs long-term accommodation, we are up and ready to deliver it, right? We were able to launch our B2B business in 15 days of our first agreement signed, right? And we were live up and running operations for 1,000 consumers in a remote part of Karnataka in 15 days, and we got very good feedback from our client partners. And that gives us confidence that the business model or the tech platform and the physical platform that we built it allows us to serve each and every consumer base. So I think our vision has expanded beyond student, right? Why can't it tomorrow be different other consumer sets without naming and committing any of those, I feel there are many other consumer audiences that can be very, very relevant for us. And secondary, for each of those audiences, there are a lot of daily services that, that they consume, whether it is bite-sized e-commerce that they consume or last mile mobility that they consume. Stanza can play a very, very strong role in each of those services, whether we do it directly, whether we partner with companies. There are, there is massive opportunity on those, which we've seen in the mini pilots that we've executed. So I think the entire, and more than Andy and me, I think the entire leadership at Stanza believes that this is no longer a, just a student and a co-living play, right? It is much wider. And that is more important to us than us believing, because in the end, they are the ones who are going out there and getting things done. And you want to add anything?
I think, Tarun, the big kind of, so were we a pandemic proof business? No, we were not. I mean, it was very clear when the pandemic hit and that, that this is going to be definitely going to hurt us in the short term. But I think one of the, a few kind of clear consumer trends have emerged out of this, which are very, very important and has changed, I think, the positioning vis-a-vis us and our competition significantly, right? And that's why we, I think we managed to raise capital as well. I think we are seeing for the first time that the Indian managed living consumer is prioritizing health, sanitation, trust, brand, all softer aspects of living in a place over and above simply price, which means that our competition, which everywhere has been the largely unorganized, you know, market operator, you know, who doesn't have to think about compliance costs or, you know, or any other kind of overheads, and hence is able to potentially price at a 500 rupees discount to a Stanza Living facility. And you know, then you have to work really hard to kind of keep the consumer with you. That sudden balance of power has changed, where suddenly consumers are saying, no, you know, forget 500 rupees. I'm willing to pay a little bit more if I were to get some place which I can trust in terms of where I want to live in and what does it mean in terms of hygiene, sanitation, safety. So for example, in JFM of this year, when we went back live and all the students started coming back to live in our facilities, we were selling product at 5 to 10% premium to what we thought would work for us in terms of, you know, our operating margins. So actually we were, and that directly hits your bottom line. So all of that was a significant margin expansion, which we saw in the short term. I don't think all of it will remain. At some point of time, the price consciousness of the Indian consumer will come back, but I think some of it will remain at this point of time, because, you know, there is going to be this kind of new focus on health, sanitation, hygiene, etc.
So there's, you're saying there's just a more, I guess, a broader change in consumer preference towards more organized space versus
So one is from a demand side lens, which is exactly what you're saying. The other thing is we have seen significant supply side obliteration, which has happened in the last kind of 18 months, which means there are less options on the table as well for consumers. So you know, now you have to really kind of be differentiated as an operator. So I just a case in point, Bangalore today has 45,000, or sorry, at the beginning of the pandemic, Bangalore had 45,000 registered paying guest slash hostel ecosystems in place, which were registered. So, you know, you can imagine that equally 100% which are not registered. Of those 45,000 registered paying guest accommodations, roughly 20,000 of them submitted the license. They kind of, you know, gave the licenses back to the association, saying that we cannot operate.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, shut down. Here's your license. I don't want to pay any kind of license costs anymore. Wow. That was the first wave. In the second wave, another 8,000 have returned the licenses. So you're seeing that that 45,000 has now become 17, 18,000 just in the last 18 months. So what that means is that, one, obviously there's a significant supply side obliteration which has happened. Two, the demand side is shifting more towards organized as well. And three is, I think suddenly from an enterprise, university, college, you know, slightly more kind of, you know, institutionalized operator lens, the focus on employee wellness, the focus on student wellness has changed completely. You would never have a blue chip tech company CEO or CHRO sitting across the table with me and discussing how they can kind of bring 1,000, 5, 1,500, 2,000 employees back to work in Bangalore or in Pune and have a conversation around, oh, can you provide them enterprise grade internet in their rooms so that you know, if 2 days they're working out of office and 3 days they're working out of home, it's seamless. And all of this there was never happening before, because earlier it was like, you know, people will come to live, work with us and, you know, we'll solve for their needs in the corporate. But, you know, what they do outside is no more our concern. Same with universities and colleges. You know, there is de-densification, which is happening. Increasingly, parents are asking about, you know, how are your hostels managed? How many people in a room? What are your kind of, you know, SOPs in place? And suddenly for us, the B2B segment, which, you know, which Sandeep was referring to earlier, we had never thought that we will be in the B2B business for at least another 24 months out. And here we are, we've got a few deals closed. We've got a lot more in the pipeline. Suddenly we are seeing inbound interest from universities and colleges. And to your point earlier, Tarun, about why this, you know, about the fundraise and how that kind of plays itself out, it's a lot of these factors which are kind of secular tailwinds, which are, you know, which are not going to be visible in the immediate short term, but which have medium term and long term impact in terms of how this business gets built out. You know, obviously, you know, we were able to kind of make the point around that, and the investors saw, you know, what was getting built out around that. You know, was very, very important in terms of how I think the post-COVID world is going to look for a stanza in that
context. Yeah. No, I remember, I think one of y'all had used this when we were chatting. This was probably 7-8 months ago, where you said, you know, now that the dust has settled, and this was, I think, pre-wave two and somewhere after wave one, where you said there are at least 3 tailwinds which are going to sort of help improve our business, but there's one headwind, which is just uncertainty of when the colleges reopen.
Yeah. And the way I think about this, I mean, this is what I like about what we are building at this point of time, is the headwind is an artificial constraint. It's not a natural constraint where, you know, consumer preferences change. No,
it's changed, yeah. This it's a short term, yeah.
Yeah, this is a university or college or a workplace being shut down for now. Fundamentally, what we are building or what we are solving for is creating a technology-enabled ecosystem for a very, very non-discretionary spend, which is a place for someone to live in. Which means actually this is very counter-cyclical. It may not be pandemic-proof in the context of what we have seen, but otherwise, economic cycles, we are very confident that this business actually sees itself through it. In that
In fact, this month itself, Tarun, there are at least 3 or 4 states where colleges have opened up for examinations, and we've seen almost 80-90% people coming back for a 15-day period to cover for their exams, right? And that shows even for such a small thing, consumers are ready to move in and do this. And all of them have had, we've seen our surveys, 90-95% people have had first dose of vaccination, and they are very confident after first dose. In few months, things should become better and better only. I mean, even if third wave comes, in our minds, it is, again, maybe a delay of 2-3 further months. It is not something which fundamentally changes, as Andy was talking.
Yeah. On that note, different cities and different states have seen a differing impact of COVID, right? Obviously, lockdown in some of the larger cities have been far more strictly implemented. Maybe in some of the smaller cities, less so. Any change in how you're thinking about geographic expansion? Any change in your sort of long-term strategy in terms of where y'all will focus? And if you can maybe share a little bit about how y'all are thinking about that.
Yep. So I don't think there is a fundamental change in terms of how we are thinking about geographies. One of the things that you mentioned is absolutely right, which is, for example, for us, Pune and Delhi were 2 markets which actually didn't open up at all, in even the first and second wave. And Pune, obviously, because of, Maharashtra was obviously one of the first kind of to go back into lockdown.
Correct.
And you know, Delhi also, we saw the kind of enormity of impact which all of this had. Honestly, this question would have been a little bit more relevant, Tarun, at the end of the first wave, where I think a lot of conversation was still happening around how this is a very urban metro phenomena. That has fundamentally changed post the
changed. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because a lot of tier 2 towns and cities have been ravaged badly through the second wave, which means that some of this entire conversation around whether people will come back to the economic centers of activity or not I think has changed fundamentally. And you're seeing that, you know, a week back, Wipro announced that in September, they're going back to work in all their offices. We are now hearing that Infosys is going to announce the same thing and some of the other tech giants will follow, which means increasingly now, I don't think that, you know, the conversation around how you build your, you know, the business from a geographic location changes. So for us, the plan was always that our working professional business is going to be very urban, you know, metro, large economic center focused. And our student business is going to be in all the knowledge. Which may or may not be in, you know, a large town or city. For example, one of the large markets we are opening up this year is Vijayawada, which is never going to be a huge economic center from a working professional migration perspective, but attracts students from all over the country in terms of, you know, student hubs and people who go to study there. So from a student business perspective, we will continue to be spreading ourselves across the length and breadth of the country. Our working professional business will continue to focus on the five largest cities at this point of time. And that's what we are focusing on.
Yeah. You touched upon this a little bit. Maybe if you can go one or two levels deeper on the student business as well as on the young professionals business.
Yeah.
Other than hygiene, you know, sanitization requirements, are you seeing any other sort of changes in consumer preference, right? Like, how you're thinking about designing the next set of Sansa properties different in any way as a result?
So very good question. We've had this has been a lot of debate internally at Sansa. I think the one thing which has not changed, and Sandeep, you will know this more than I will. The one thing which has not changed is occupancy preferences, which means consumers still will not pay 2x to get a single occupancy room as opposed to a double occupancy room. So I don't think that has changed fundamentally. I think there was a lot of question whether people would now prefer private rooms over shared rooms or not.
Yeah.
That we have not seen change at all. Hmm. However, what has changed is a lot of questions are being asked of us around what happens if there's a lockdown again. You know, will there be continuity of service delivery? You know, are you well equipped to kind of provide food to me four times a day, even if there is a lockdown in
extended lockdown? Yeah.
Do you have a backup internet connection in your properties or not? And, you know, what happens if your internet connection fails? If I don't want to work in the same room as my roommate because he's on a Zoom call, is there a quiet place in your property where I can go to and sit down and work or not? So those are the kind of questions which we are seeing. So a lot of common area design changes are happening as a result. I would say the room fundamentally has not changed despite what I think a lot of people initially thought would happen, which is a lot of requirement for private rooms. We have not seen that happen. I don't know.
And are sort of your college, university partners, any big requirements coming from their side in terms of mass testing, quarantine facilities, some more, or I guess, you know, security procedures, stuff like that. Just like y'all are seeing, and how are y'all sort of responding to that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of questions around what happens if a student or a working professional in your facility contracts COVID. What are the kind of processes you have in place? So we have obviously put, for example, a lot of processes in place. So every demand center and micro market of ours has a building always on standby to be used for only quarantining people. So if tomorrow someone is sick, he doesn't stay in his room, he moves out into a separate facility completely. And that facility then has kind of fully kind of, you know, WHO protocols in place, irrespective. All our facilities anyways will have COVID protocols in place. But I think the big question which people are asking is that, are we running the risk of mass COVID contraction just because one person picks up COVID and hence, you know, it passes it on to everyone else? I think we have responded to that. And I think people, till now, at least what we're hearing is people are satisfied with what we are saying.
Sandeep. Yeah. No, I think this is what mostly it is, right? And requirement for RT-PCR vaccinations, et cetera, is there, which anyways, every organization is taking deep care of. I think, Tarun, what has helped us fundamentally in this is being more and more full stack than a lot of others, right? So it has allowed us to continue our services because the decision making is more and more in your hands versus not.
Yeah.
So food being in-house has allowed us to ensure that even during the heaviest of lockdowns in last year, May, etc., we were always able to ensure all four meals are delivered across all our buildings. And that that was something which is which can otherwise be very, very difficult and hard.
Yeah.
And second was, I think our approach has always been deep in clusters, and therefore we don't ever have one isolated building in any part of the city, right? And mm-hmm. that allows us to ensure that the micro scale is always useful for us to deliver these last minute services that or just any COVID norms that need to be followed. And on the other part around the design of the building, which Andy was saying, he's absolutely right in terms of the room design hasn't changed a lot. The only thing that we've started working on and few buildings we've designed around that is a lot of thought has been given on in and out working and I would say living environment. So a lot of people might continue to spend a day at hostel and work from home or work from hostel environment. So having dining areas or cafe areas which can be doubled up as working zones is something which has become an integral part of our design. We are trying to get more and more study tables for our consumers so that they can take individual Zoom calls or they can study from room on one day a week sort of an environment. So I think the sharing is still as it was in the past, and any economic impact cannot happen to the consumer. So we have to be real that it's not that people have started earning more because of COVID, right? So how will they start spending more? They've actually got impacted in their income. So we have to be extremely competitive on every economic lens, and we are trying to create a value for money brand and value for money offering for our consumers, right? And in that spirit, we are trying to make it more and more convenient rather than adding any extra cost to the consumer in every part of our design. So our aspiration is to continuously reduce our costs and continuously reduce our design costs so that we can pass on the benefit to our consumers.
Yeah. You guys alluded to B2B business and how y'all sort of quickly were able to respond to that. Is that another big macro shift that you foresee happening where earlier, you know, colleges, corporates almost didn't care where the employees or the students are, right? And like you said, they only worried about what's happening within the campus. And then once, you know, the employee or the student leaves campus, it was up to them. Are you seeing much more openness as well as much more involvement from these in terms of working with you know, companies such as yours?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's I think fundamental to kind of one of the most fundamental changes we are seeing in the market today, which is a lot of demand which we are seeing today is actually not from the individual, but it's forward looking from a corporate, saying that look, this is the service set which I want for X people who are going to live in your facility. A lot of people are asking us to make their facility exclusive to their company if possible. And are willing to pay up to kind of make it exclusive if possible. And they're very clear on what they want, what service set they need. And there's no ambiguity at all. I think the one big concern which I always have with kind of the B2B and the corporate business is working capital management, because obviously that becomes a problem. But in a lot of cases, the corporates are saying, you know, you charge this to the end consumer. This is the price I'm going to lock in, and you charge that, and we're going to kind of make it very clear.
So they're basically partnering with you on the spec and the pricing, but they're basically leaving the end consumer to, so it doesn't change that.
So they are asking the end consumer to either pay it directly and then get reimbursed from the corporate, or you know, pay it directly. But they're not they're willing to take on the inventory risk. I think that's the most important learning which we have.
And this is across the chain. It's not just for, I would say, senior managers. We've seen that happening at managerial level. We've seen it happening at I would say, very lowest levels of organizations also. So for every employee, they are equally, I would say, sensitive about this. And this is the first time mass migration has happened, right? And mass migration, reverse migration happened to their hometowns. Now, there needs to be some clear incentive and timing so that they can bring back all the people so that the office environments and culture is also set up.
Yeah. I think final question, and this is a little bit more forward looking. As you look at, I mean, if I just take the overall, and again, I'll start with student and then we'll talk about young professionals and other segments that you are looking to go after. It almost seems like you've just, you know, scratched the surface of what this market could turn out to be. Right. And I won't share any numbers because I know you all will kill me after the call. So I'll keep the numbers outside of this. But you guys are aggressively expanding. You all are adding inventory and supply very rapidly. We all hope that there's no more major disruptions on the demand side. But two things. One is, what's your point of view on the market opportunity? And take a 5 to 10 year lens of that. Within that, how do you look at international? Are you guys considering it? I know it was probably, again, very tempting to look at international markets, especially over the last 6-8 months, saying, hey, we have the capital, we have the know-how, why don't we look at another market which is probably less affected by COVID than India is? So how do you think about that? But even long-term, like, how do you look at international? Where will Stanza be 5 to 7 years from today?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to think about how the business model will evolve, right? And then, you know, where does it take us geographically? One of the things, and there's a lot of talk in within, you know, in the offices today, these days, about Stanza 2.0. And we're asking ourselves, what does Stanza 2.0 look like, right? Awesome. And one of the things which we've been saying is that, let's make this analogy to a personal computer, where we say that the real estate is like the hardware of a personal computer. And every service which a consumer needs today is like a software which sits on that personal computer. But that software cannot talk to the hardware, or that service cannot talk to the real estate without an operating system. And what does Stanza want to be? And Stanza wants to be this kind of technology-backed operating ecosystem which wraps itself around any real estate and suddenly makes it convenient for a consumer to access not just the space, but also amenitized space, which kind of then makes it easy for them to kind of move in and start living. And when you make that the problem statement, suddenly the problem doesn't become limited to students or young working professionals. There are multiple people who need access to a range and bouquet of services, and they want to do it in a subscription-led manner, in a subscription-led manner, which could be like bite-sized, you know, full 12-month, whatever. We could kind of figure that out. So a lot of questions which we are asking ourselves is that if this were to be a pure-player technology platform, you know, forget anything else, what do we need to do to kind of build that out, whether irrespective of whether we do it at students, working professionals, you know, married couples tomorrow, senior living day after. So there are multiple consumer sets which we could go after, right? So really, we are saying that we've got this very, the core which we have built out, can we now expand lifetime value of this consumer? So he walks in at the age of 17 into a Stanza facility and hopefully stays with you for life, because over time, we've kind of expanded into different segments which correspond to different stages of his life. And he continues to be a part of the Stanza ecosystem. You know, whether it's a Stanza managed hostel, or whether it's tomorrow a Stanza managed apartment, or whether it's tomorrow a Stanza managed senior living facility, and so on and so forth. The other piece is, you know, today we have this all services included, one single price, which someone kind of signs up for and he gets everything in that. But there are multiple other things which the consumer kind of spends on, and, you know, whether it's discretionary, non-discretionary, different kinds. Can we become that conduit through which, you know, a lot of other brands, other services talk to the consumer? And can we then kind of, you know, do some of the top of the funnel skimming on some of that to kind of give me more, you know, larger share of wallet than what we are doing? So it's both in terms of expanding the number of months and number of years a consumer spends with you, and what does he spend per month with you to kind of end up getting a larger piece of the pie from this consumer. And I think that's going to be very, very heavily technology-led as opposed to inventory-led in the coming future. So I think we are increasingly preparing ourselves for a product-led, non-inventory-led growth in the coming kind of 12, 18 months. And I think we'll be live with some of this in the next 6 to 12 months for sure. And I think that's where this suddenly takes a life of its own, right? Then suddenly you can look at any residential building and say, okay, is this Stanza plugged in or not? And hence, correct, you know, is the Stanza operating system on it or not? You know, I think that's the way we would think about this. And suddenly to the point that Sandeep was making earlier, fixed cost management. You suddenly are doing so many buildings in one area. Your fixed cost management just gets better. It becomes more value for money. It's kind of virtuous, you know, loop which you get into. And I think once that gets built out, that's very unique in the global context. And then that suddenly is very, very exportable as a business model. And so for us, the way at least Sandeep and I have discussed this, that probably international expansion, unless it happens opportunistically now, will be 18 to 24 months out from where we are. Obviously, you know, if opportunity knocks on our door and something exciting comes by and it gives a chance to go, you know, international, we might do it today. But I think the plan is very clear that build out this Tanza 2.0 ecosystem. And then, you know, you, suddenly this becomes definitely, you know, you can take it to the rest of the world. And that's when, you know, this kind of acquires a life of its own completely.
Yeah. Sandeep, you want to add from what's your, I mean, would love to hear some color from you as well.
I think Andy has covered everything. For us, Tarun, it's always been about ensuring that our core is intact and the core is expanding itself. All these ancillary services that we're talking is becoming part of the core, and international expansion then becomes ancillary to that. So we will want to be very, very robust in what we do in terms of all the top of the funnel services, whether some of them don't exist in the market. So we might have to build some of those. And some of them exist.
Like you guys so did with partner. Food and so many other things, yeah.
Like we did with food and so many others that are consumer pain points which don't exist. They help us build a very strong moat across, around our business, right? And it becomes such a strong moat that we don't want to look behind our back as we are expanding, right, constantly. And therefore, I think we'll rather solidify our business here. The TAM is extremely large. B2B space is extremely large. So one of the reasons why we always wanted to expand internationally was TAM. You know, it is so large here that why don't we capture significant part of that here before we look into international expansion. And so 18 to 24 months is absolutely right. Now, I never say never. B2B was again 18 to 24 months away in our mind. It happened faster than we planned. So if something exciting comes up, then we never say no to any exciting opportunities.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. This is... I really, really enjoyed and learned a lot through this conversation. Appreciate you guys candidly sharing your insights. Very excited about what I guess the next few years of Tanza are going to be. I know you guys are just getting started. It seems like a little bit like, you know, we spent a lot of the last 12 months where I'm sure there have been some frustrating moments, there have been some impatient moments, but I know what you guys have done under the hood in terms of really strengthening the core. So very, very excited about seeing how this all sort of unfolds once market opens up a little bit more and allows us to do sort of experience everything you guys have done. So very excited about the future and thank you again for doing this.
Thank you, Tarun.
Thank you, Tarun.
Thanks for tuning in. For more Matrix Moments episodes, you can head to www.matrixpartners.in/blog. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for more updates.